Hey everyone, welcome back to Refuge Radio. I'm Gaines Taylor, he, him.
I'm Brendan Bell, he, him.
I'm Piper Jones, they, them. And this is our guest, Zach.
And I am Zachary Gillis, better known as Zach, he, him. So I am a South Bend resident. I've been here for about 15 years. I am the care coordinator and associate worship director at South Bend City Church. And in addition to that, I teach high school choir part-time. It's been an adventure. Hug a teacher. I mean, that's the basic overview. Green is my favorite color. I have two chihuahuas. Love living in South Bend.
Yes.
And, you know, I just love finally being my authentic self.
Yes.
Amen. We'd love to hear that. What do you teach? Mm-hmm.
I teach choir.
Somehow I knew.
So, you know, I do. I teach choir. We're presently rebuilding the music program.
Oh, I'm sure.
This year I had three kids, so we were a little strong but mighty trio, which is good. But, you know, I'm thinking that I have more next year. Yeah. And as soon as I rebuild and more students join the class, I'm out like Natty McPhee.
Now, Zach, I told you I was going to ask you something else first, but then I realized I should just let everyone know. So, Zach, we actually know each other.
We do.
For many years. So we went to college together, and we actually met because we were in choir together.
That is very sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, it was like, I feel like we just missed each other. I distinctly remember the day when I first met you. So here's what happened.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Tell.
I was a little freshman, a little sprite, 19-year-old kid. And then our mutual friend, Lindsay Cheddar, now Lindsay Stevenson, calls me into a side room. And she's like, Zach, come here. And Brendan was in there. And she had told Brendan, oh, you need to listen to this kid. He can sing. And I was like, no, I'm shy. And then she was like, just sing anything. And I was like, what do you want me to sing? And she said, sing and I'm telling you I'm not going. And I was like, I don't know that song. I know that song. And then she said, just try it. And then I was like, okay. And I am telling you, you know, just went off a little bit. And then after I did a line of that, Brenda was like, wow, that was great. That really blessed me. And I was like, okay, nice to meet you. And then I went on about my business.
Wow.
Like,
what an intro.
Okay, well,
I would get over here with just a lighter ghost.
She blesses me too.
Oh my goodness. That's beautiful. Because I distinctly remember, I didn't remember that you sang to me, but I definitely remembered Lindsay Cheddar pulled you like into the room and was like, you need to meet Zach. And I was like, yes. Well, Zach, thank you so much for coming on the show and for sharing a little bit of your story with us. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about young Zach growing up? Tell us a little bit about what were some of your first experiences or in growing up? What was your interaction with religion? What did that look like? Yeah, what were some of those early experiences like for you?
Okay, so my father is a pastor, and we had been at the same church for, well, this year was 32 years. He's retiring. So we had a, you know, nice big shindig. All that, it was beautiful, wonderful, amazing. My relationship with church was really good, actually, because number one, like, I grew up missionary Baptist. That's like foot stomping, hand clapping, charismatic, as some evangelicals say. And I had a good time in church. Church was fun. It never seemed like it was a big task. You know, church is actually where I found out that I could sing. And I wasn't one of those kids that you had to force to go to choir rehearsal. Like, I wanted to go to the adult choir rehearsal and I wanted to go to the youth choir rehearsal. Like, I wanted to be in all of it. And the fact that I was my father's only son, because there's two of us, have an older sister who is also queer. And it's me. So in the Black church community, the family, the pastor's family, is known as the first family. So there's a lot of esteem and a lot of prestige that comes with that. But our parents made sure that we weren't those stuck-up preacher's kids. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted us to maintain a level of quietness and poise, but they still wanted us to be on the same level as the other kids. You know, so they were like, if everybody else's kid is involved, so are you. So not only were we in choir, we were a part of the youth usher board. We were a part of the step team, the drill team, all that kind of stuff. And I enjoyed every minute of it. And on top of that, like, the fact that I was my parents' baby means that I was the church's baby. Mm-hmm. And going on 33, they still consider me their baby. So, yeah, having just left there, they're like, well, let us know when you get back. Be safe. Mm-hmm. All of that. So yeah, above all, it was wonderful. I had good memories in church.
That's wonderful. It sounds like there was a lot of love there.
There was a lot of love there. You know, when it comes to things concerning the queer community, typically in the Black church tradition, it's very much a don't ask, don't tell. Mm. Like, okay, the minister of music or that choir director may be a part of the family, but that's them. Just sing and just play.
Mm. Yeah.
And leave that stuff out of here. You know, that narrative was definitely tough when I think about it as an adult. Mm. You know, yeah. So aside from that, it was wonderful. That's where, you know, I got my faith foundation from. And it was very pivotal. My faith was very pivotal in my journey of coming out. So,
yeah.
Which I know is not everyone's story.
Yeah.
But it's mine. So.
Yep.
Well, and you said you're 33 and that your dad's been pastoring there for 32 years. So you've only really known that one faith space, one environment.
Yes.
That sounds like probably a whole experience in and of itself. I wonder, as the pastor's kid, did you ever feel like maybe you faced a little more scrutiny in terms of like how people approached you, or was it all very mind your business from?
Oh, it was scrutiny, hands down. I mean, even growing up, like, I remember I was talking to someone about another person. I had to be about 10 or 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And then it got back to my mother. And that's when she was like, Zachary, not everybody is your friend. Some people just want to be around you because you're the pastor's son. Mm. So stop running your mouth so much and be careful what you say to other people. And I was like, okay. So that's what it came with. Every single thing that we did was just a bigger deal because we were my father's kids. Mm-hmm. But that was pressure that my dad never put on us. Never. He never put pressure on us to be a certain way. They never shielded us from anything unless it wasn't age appropriate, which is, I think, what parents should do. But yeah, I mean, I didn't come out until I was an adult. Mm. Now, there were rumors around the church when I was a kid. There were definitely rumors. And at that time, I was dating a young lady. When you know better, you do better. But, you know, she was absolutely amazing. I absolutely adore her to this day. And one Sunday, I brought her to church. And then when I brought her to church, like, people knew who she was. And I was proud, had a little swag. Throughout my little thing, one thing that I did was that when we would walk places, I would always have her walk in front of me. And I would like put my hand at the small of her back to be like, all right, so, oh, we got to go this way. We got to go that way and things like that. And the people at church saw me doing that. And they were like,
The small of her back, sir.
Yeah. I was 14. Oh. 14, swaggy. But then after that, they started fussing, like, why couldn't he choose a girl from here? So I could not, I couldn't win.
No.
I couldn't win at all.
Now, when you were a kid growing up in that space, did you know you were queer? Or when did your awareness of that kind of come into the picture?
I was about 12. I was about 11 or 12. You know, can we be real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
100%. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, realize exactly.
That your body parts do more than just use the bathroom.
Yeah. What?
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
Who knew?
You know, that was around the time when I was like, wait a minute. I think I have these feelings, but, you know, society told me that it was bad. Mm.
Yeah.
And check this out. It wasn't from the theological standpoint. It was more so from the social standpoint of being in the Black community and being a Black child, to where sometimes I would overhear the conversations of my male relatives, you know, and they would talk about, you know, gay men. Oh, he a punk, or he a sissy, or he this and he that. And that was always, you know, a negative thing. And I had known that as a child, I was more, to society standards, I was more effeminate. Mm. I wasn't the rough and tumble kid. You know, I didn't want to go out and do yard work and play football and basketball and stuff. You know, I liked art. I was a creative. I liked to cook. If I got my hands dirty, I wanted to plant flowers. And all of these things are just stupid societal stereotypes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just so, just dumb, just absolutely dumb.
Yep.
But speaking of that, I was doing things that typically a woman would do. And, you know, there would be moments when my dad would correct it, when he'd be like, no, watch how you're holding your hand, or why are you standing like that? Or why are you rolling your neck? Or why are you doing this and that and the other, you know?
Yeah.
So all of that to say, I wanted to sequester it. I wanted to push it far down and be like, no. You know, so I just did what was expected of me. You know, once I got to the age where I could date, I found a really pretty girl. We were friends. We talked to each other, and I did feel things for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I absolutely adored her. We dated for 6 years, from the ages of 14 to 20. We legit grew up together, but something, it was just missing. It wasn't hitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I was about 12.
Yeah.
How old were you when you came out then?
I told my first person when I was 22.
Mm. Okay.
And that was to the last girlfriend that I had. It was a lot. You know, but then she goes, oh, well, that's fine, because she's bisexual. And I was like, well, I don't think I'm bisexual, but okay. Yeah, that's when I started. It was like I came out in stages. You know, 22, yeah. Came out to her. And then by the time I turned 24, and by that time, I was a staff member at me and Brenda's alma mater.
Yep.
And I had gotten to the point where my faith had started to become my own, and I started to do research for myself, you know, because nobody has time for regurgitatory theology. I want to figure it out for myself.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, I'm gay and I don't think that's wrong. So I started telling close friends. Mm-hmm. And then I told my parents when I was 26. And after that, that was it. That was all that I needed. I'm like, if my parents are cool, then I don't care what anybody else has to say. We're fine.
Yeah, that flag's flying now.
Yeah. So I know, Zach, we existed both as closeted queer people in this exact same conservative Christian space. And so I'm just curious to hear a little bit more about your experience as a closeted gay man in that space. What was that like for you? What did that feel like for you? Were you even I know, like, because I will just say, like, for myself, like, I was 100% in like a brain space of like, being gay is wrong. I don't want this. I'm going to do like everything I can to like get rid of this. But so I'm just curious, where were you at when you were in that space, and what was it like for you to navigate that?
I was definitely torn. Definitely torn, because I'm the type of person that truly values authenticity, and I did not want to live a lie, but because of the Christian narrative that we were given, that, you know, your sexuality, if it's anything outside of the heterosexual norm, you're bound for hell. My mindset was that I loved God so much, and that I wanted to be pleasing in his sight, that if it meant for me to be by myself for the rest of my life, I would do it. And let me tell y'all something. The single life is absolutely fantastic. I love it. I love it. I'm thriving. I'm doing great. But I'm not single by choice. Mm. You know, like, it's a desire in my heart to share my life with someone special. And it had gotten to a point at Bethel, and it wasn't until I was a staff member when I started to realize how unfair it was that I had one of two options. I either had to be in a symbiotic marriage with someone of the opposite sex, or be celibate. Like, that was the narrative that was preached. Even during chapel, they would invite these ex-gay speakers to come in. Yeah.
The finger quotes did not carry over the audio format, but yeah, we hear you.
Gay speaker.
I did some passive aggressive air quotes.
Listen, yeah. It's a clear day, no shade, ain't a tree in sight. Mm-hmm. But I would listen to that narrative, and there was one in particular that was like, well, God does everything in decency and in order. So that means that if he has someone for you, it's only right that it be someone of the opposite sex. And I was like, that's confusing.
That is very confusing.
That's confusing to me. And God is not the author of confusion. The confusion is having someone who is gay marry someone who is straight. What?
No. Yeah.
Zero sense. So this was all, this is what I was thinking through internally throughout my journey at Bethel. And the narrative started to switch. Mm-hmm. It really, really started to switch at a particular moment where I had a friend, and he's still my friend to this day. I love him with all my heart. He's one of those friends where if you don't speak for a lengthy amount of time, you pick up right where you left off.
I love that.
But there was a situation, he was in heterosexual marriage, and he ended up being unfaithful to his wife with men. And it was at that moment when I was like, that will never be me. Never. I walked alongside him through it, and it was messy. It was messy, you know, and she was pregnant with her first child at the time. I said, said the ducks. I'm not going to do that. So I'll just be by myself. But then, like I said earlier, that narrative really started to switch more and more when I was just like, something's not lining up here. So yeah, initially I just wanted to please God at Bethel. And after a long time of just praying and being angry, like, I would walk the floor and just yell and be like, if this is such an abomination, if this is so unpleasing to you, why don't you just take it away? You can do all things. Why would you be so mean to give me this? And there's no option for me to have true holistic love where I'm totally and completely attracted to whoever I'm going to be with. Like, what is this? You know? But it was in that moment when I know I heard the words came to my brain, this is not a deal breaker. We got work to do. Let's do it. And I think that is when my faith and my sexuality began to reconcile with each other. You know, and after a few years, I am where I am today in ministry.
What do you do these days then for your ministry work, if you don't mind?
Well, work at a church.
Excellent.
Yeah, work at a church, South Bend City Church. I'm like, and I'm on a journey to like formal ordination.
Nice. Yeah.
Through them, which is lit. Which is lit. My dad is super proud.
So what's the environment difference at South Bend City Church now compared to working at Bethel? Like the exactly. I'm just gonna
Can you verbalize that for us?
Oh, I'm telling you, freedom. I remember when I started working at South Bend City Church part-time, I was still on staff at Bethel. Now, technically, being on the Res Life staff, you couldn't have another job. But, you know, I do what I want.
Amen.
Yeah. No, but nobody really said anything to me about it. And I had bills, so... And I wanted to take the opportunity. So I did that. And then there were some Bethel students that came and even a couple staff members that saw me on that platform and I was singing and they were like, who are you? They said, you don't sing like this at Bethel and you seem like you're a generally happy person, but here it seems like it's genuine. Yeah. And I said, well, yeah, that's because I'm free. I'm free. And this it makes a difference. Your worship changes.
It does.
I believe when you do it is what it says in the Bible, when you worship God in spirit and in truth. And as soon as I started adding that truth to it, that was it. You know, I didn't have to sneak. I didn't have to be undercover. Like, and I mean, and even so towards my time, I started to, you know, tell more people, and I would mentor students, and I would be like, well, I'm not going to ask you to be vulnerable with me, and I'm not vulnerable with you. I am gay, and I don't think anything is wrong with it, you know? So the kids knew. So it got to a point where the closeted kids would send me an email. They'd be like, hey, Zach, can I talk to you? And I'd be like, yep, come on. Yeah, and I would have to give him the caveat. Don't tell anybody I told you this because I can get fired.
What was it like living and existing in that workspace where it was becoming more and more apparent that your internal lived experiential values did not match the values of the organization you were a part of?
It was very, I won't say that I was anxious. I just knew there was a sense of urgency that I felt to get out of there, you know? I remember when the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was signed downstate in Indianapolis. And what that did was give our school a Title IX exemption, meaning that they could fire me because of my sexuality. And then I remember I pulled up the formal HR document concerning the LGBTQ community. And they said, not only could you not be a, as they say, practicing member of the LGBTQ community, but you cannot advocate or promote any of it. And that will be grounds for termination.
But Zach, if you ain't practicing, how are you gonna go pro?
That's what I'm saying. You know? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You can't be here's what they would say. You can't be a practicing gay. Verbatim. That's what they said. I was like, oh,
that's
okay.
Ridiculous.
Well, you know, and we had an Office of Diversity and Inclusion, which I think is oxymoronic.
100%.
Like, how you gonna call yourself an Office of Diversity and Inclusion and you have exclusions? Name it something else. At this point, call a thing a thing. If you're going to have a stance, do that. But the thing about it is that I feel like that there are a lot of places in the realm of Christianity that have this culture of courtesy, this nice, nasty sort of we're admonishing you in love thing that just made me sick. I was so sick of it. And I said, well, you know what? I'm with South Bend City Church. Let me just bow out gracefully before y'all fire me. Because now they're telling their students not to come see us.
And Zach, if I'm remembering correctly, I feel like I was connected in with a lot of you all who were like on staff at Bethel at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And weren't they, no, I don't know if this is true or not, but I feel like somebody was telling me that they were making all of the staff sign a document saying they opposed marriage equality. Is that true? Was that like a part of that same thing that was happening in Indiana at the time?
You know, I don't remember signing such document, and knowing myself, I probably wouldn't have. If it was given to me. But you know, it blew my mind at how many queer students we had and queer staff members. Like, we were there, but a couple of us left because we weren't wanted. And we were the creators of culture on that campus, me and my boy Josh. Like, we created things that are in existence and that are still thriving there, even though we left. So I think that was hurtful. But after a while, it's just like, hey, you go your way, I go mine, and I'll see you when I get there. So
after having like existed in that space and in such a like profound way for so long, like you had such an impact on students that you were working with, maybe can you tell us a little bit about what was your role at this university, and then what was kind of, I guess, the impact on those relationships that you created once you came out?
So I worked in student life. I started out as an assistant resident director, and I worked for what was then called the Center for Intercultural Development. I was the campus coordinator for that. So diversity and inclusion. So really, I championed, you know, our attempts to make our place a more interculturally competent space. And at a predominantly white, conservative Christian institution in Indiana, that was hard in and of itself. Like, it was tough telling people that they had privilege because of the color of their skin. Like, the pushback that we got was bananas. Oh my gosh. But you know, I went toe to toe with them. I sure did. So that right there, that was tough. That was tough in and of itself. I mean, not even mentioning the queer community and how we need to be a welcoming place for that. So yeah, I did a lot of that. I lived on campus. So our job was to form relationships with students and, you know, just be available to them. You know, it was funny, they would say, well, they would come up to us and they'd be like, so wait, what do y'all do? And it took all of me to not say, talk to you. Like, that's what I do. I talk to y'all a little behind. Like, get out of my face. And I will say that my kids, as I call them when I'm like 2 or 3 years older than them, what is that? But when I came out, a lot of them were really happy for me. A lot of them admired my example, which was really nice. I remember I had one mentee of mine when I told him that I was leaving, and that was for that reason. Bless his heart, he started weeping. And I said, well, what's wrong? Are you okay? What's wrong? And then I said, I'm fine. I'm good. And he was like, no, it just really, really makes me sad that you felt that you couldn't serve or that God wouldn't use you anymore because of your sexuality. Because that's what I thought. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's what I thought. Oh, no. And my church, just, if you weren't living right, as they would say, you would get sat down. You weren't allowed to, you would have to do a little hiatus. You weren't allowed to take leadership positions, anything like that. So this kid was like, I can't believe that you would think that. And, you know, it was super encouraging, super sweet, which I absolutely loved. But yeah, some of those relationships have maintained. Honestly, I can tell you, the connection that I have with my students is still there. Now, colleagues, that's a different story. But yeah, my students are doing great. And some of them go to South Bend City Church.
That's awesome.
Which is really good. Which is really good. Yeah. So yeah, they've been wonderful and loving and supportive. Yeah, I don't think I had a student say, okay, I can't be cool with you anymore. Goodbye.
Wow.
No, I did not have that.
That's amazing.
And I feel like it's such a test. I mean, it's such a testament to who you are as a person. And I think you're welcome. And I think it's also just such a testament to like genuine love and ministry and what that is and what that isn't. Because I feel like, sounds like many of your colleagues and what I experienced in that space and in similar spaces, is that it was just like effectiveness in ministry is equal to holiness.
Yeah.
And this is then this is an exact list of what holiness is.
Right.
And it's like I think the further I go in life, the more I'm just like, that is just such bullshit. And I think it's like people respond to genuine love and connection and empathy and understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like if you have that, that's what we want. And so people are going to keep wanting that from you.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like it's just, it's ridiculous. And so I think it makes so much sense to me that your students are still wanting to be connected to you and still feel that connection because the relationships you built with them are real and genuine. And the love I'm sure that you had for them is real and genuine. And it's like, but that's from the like that top tier hierarchy. It's like that's not the mode that they're operating from, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Largely. I mean, I don't want to say for everyone that's exactly what they're doing, and I know what they're doing. So I don't, but I mean just like broadly corporately, it's like that is just not where we're at, unfortunately. Yeah.
But like on a personal connection level too, there is a lot of truth behind the whole idea of real sees real. And even just in this brief interaction I've gotten to have with you, I feel like you've got such a warmth and an authenticity and a confidence in who you are. That is something that is really magnetic, and people will see that and know that they can connect with you in a real and like genuine way.
Oh,
and not
you.
Just kind of on a surface level. Like, no, you seem like someone who actually genuinely cares for others and not just like, you know who you are, and then people will feel like they can be more who they are by your example. And I think that's very cool.
Thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate that.
Zach, something that as you are telling your story, I feel like you just have such like an inner tenacity.
Mm.
And I'm curious, like, so for you, when you're in these spaces that are hostile, like you even mentioned like existing in a predominantly white space, feeling like you need to challenge people on their privilege. And then also just being a queer person in a predominantly straight space. And you seem to engage it in a way that is really great and really healthy. Like you don't shrink back, you push forward, but you don't do it in a way like you do it in such, it seems like you do it in such a beautiful and meaningful way.
Mm.
Where does that, I guess my question for you is, where does that come from? How do you do that? How have you been able to maintain that for yourself?
You know, it's a combination of the ancestors. How I was taught growing up, I had a lot of validation, particularly being a Black child in this country. People told me that I was smart. People told me that I was handsome. People told me that I was talented. They told me that I belonged in these spaces just as much as anybody else did. And a lot of that just came from a portion of it. It just came from the advice of others. You know, you realize, I feel like I realized pretty early that it's not to be impossible and it's not to be conceited. You know, you don't you don't have to make a big fuss. When you come into a room, come into it like you own it, like you're supposed to be there. And I just take that with me. And I mean, especially when going into queer spaces, you know, the straight spaces, I got down pat. I have that down. I'm like, I'm here. What's up? How's it going? And there's absolutely positively nothing that you can do about it, you know?
Yeah.
So I channel that. It's in my bloodlines. It's in my personality. I think I get that from my mother. But it's in the gay spaces where I really had to tap into it, because I'll be real with you. Y'all know how cisgender gay men are or how they can be.
Yep.
And if you're not tall, white, and skinny, some of them don't think that you belong with them.
Yep.
You know, so that was something that I really had to tap into when entering those spaces, you know, as a tall, black, thick all over man, you know? So, some people can misconstrue it and can get a bit intimidated by it, but I'm not intimidating. I'm nice, right?
Yep.
Right. I'm nice. Yeah. I want to get to know people.
Yeah.
You know, that's all of that. You know, you just kind of tap into it. I think that there's a difference between being confident and being arrogant.
Yeah.
And being pompous. I never want to cross that line.
Yeah.
I never do. And that's a level of confidence that I want everybody to have. Like, you can have I belong here, and so do you. You matter, you're important, you're a human, you have intrinsic value. So act like it. Shit.
Yeah, I mean, I would never take you as an arrogant person. The one time we met in person at that conference, like, exactly, you are very just walking into the room, but so welcoming, like everyone has said here. It's just, you know, like, I am not good with going into, it takes so much energy for me to go into a room and be like, okay, I need to talk to people and meet people. That's challenging. But like, you were just like, yeah, come hang out. And this is our little queer corner of friends. We're going to talk here. Why all the like straight white men go do their thing?
You know what, James? Like, believe it or not, it's hard for me too. Like, some people get shook when I tell them that I'm actually an introvert. Like, I recharge by being by myself. I try to give folks this distinction. People give me life, they don't give me energy.
I like that.
Yeah. So after being around folks, I'm going to go home and sit in the dark for 5 minutes.
That's so real.
And then,
I get that.
Mm-hmm. And then reacclimate myself. And small talk is something that I hate. So I had to learn how to do it, especially if I was going to lean into this call to ministry. You know, and I was trying, like, being a preacher's child, you know, I had to talk to everybody. I had to go around and say, oh, hey, how you doing, and things like that. And I think it helped the fact that I had, I guess, this unwarranted position or whatever, that was just like, oh, well, that's Reverend Gillis's son, like, he'll talk to you. Or, oh, this is Zach, he's one of our pastors, he'll talk to you, and things like that. So I was definitely conditioned for that.
So, Zach, I am thinking back to the start of our podcast where you're sharing a little bit about your experience growing up as a pastor's kid. Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned you came out, like, your final coming out moment was when you were 26 and you came out to your parents. And I can imagine what you have told us about, you know, the privilege of being the pastor's kid and being a part of the first family. I'm assuming there was some pressure on you to not, or that was not in the cards for them or what they were thinking. And so I guess I'm just curious, was that a pressure that you experienced in your thoughts about coming out? And then, yeah, what was that experience of coming out to them like, if you want to share?
Honestly, I was the one that was nervous about my dad's ministry being negatively influenced. Because when he first got to our church, it was pretty small. and it had grown substantially. And I didn't want to mess that up for him. I didn't want to do that. That was in the back of my mind. But I remember coming out to my mother, because I came out to her first. And she said, Zachary, I don't think it's possible for me to love you any more than I already do. And she said, be yourself, be safe, keep praying, and hold on to your faith. And then she went, you want me to tell your daddy? And I was like, okay. I said, maybe wait on that a bit. And then she told him in a rather dramatic way, but he was just like, okay, so what do you expect me to do? You expect me to fall out or something? Like, and that is when I realized, like, my dad was always my dad first. Always. I'm not one of those preacher's kids that have resentment or animosity toward the church because I felt like they took my daddy away from me. Because it was the exact opposite. It was, you know. And when he had to do his church duties, the church folks took care of us. Like, these people helped to raise my sister and I. But yeah, and I remember telling my sister that. I said, well, I don't want to mess up daddy's ministry. I don't want it to, you know, I don't want it to suffer. And then my sister told me, oh, Zachary, don't worry about that. He said, don't worry about it. Daddy will handle it, whatever. You just do you and be yourself. Yeah. So the pressure that I put was, I mean, the pressure that, you know, I would think would come from my parents in the ministry, I put on myself, you know. And then it was, I want to say, maybe about a year after I came out, the LGBTQ Center did a really nice write-up about me for Black History Month, Black Futures. And I was able to, you know, give a little blurb about my story. And people from my dad's church commented on it. And they were like, we're so proud of you. We love you. You know, keep doing great things. So I'm very well aware that not everybody has that experience. And I'm so grateful that there are people that love me so fiercely that they would much rather have me with a partner than not have me at all. Because they also know that I have a gift of goodbye. Listen, if you are not with this, I will chuck the deuces and I will go about my business.
We're out. Farewell. It's been nice.
You know, Vita's ain't goodbye. Listen, because I know that there are people that love me. And so when I think about it, I'm like, man, what were you concerned about? What is, what's your problem? But yeah, I mean, all of that to say, if there was any pressure, I put it on myself. And if there was pressure from my parents' side, I never heard anything about it, you know? So it wasn't, and it's not like the church is suffering. My daddy retired after 32 years.
I'm curious, now that you have been out for so long and kind of experienced the freedom of being yourself, being able to exist in a workspace where you have been able to be yourself and bring, you're in such a cool, unique space, because so I've only been to South Bend City Church once and I loved it. I was like, I went to church still. This is the church I would go to. But it's such a cool church, such a beautiful, well, actually I haven't been to it since you moved to the new building.
Your old building was,
oh, okay. Okay.
But yeah,
the old building was such a beautiful space.
Thank you.
And so what has it been like being able to be yourself? And I think, what are you seeing in terms of like long-term impact from existing, from not being able to exist in that space for your whole life? Or what are you seeing as the impact on you right now?
I would definitely say it's a pretty great impact. I I came to the realization that I'm finally in a space where I don't have to change who I am. I get to give as I am. And the fact that I get to do that, I get to do something that I love to do. You know, singing is something that gives me a whole lot of joy, no matter what type of music I'm singing. But I'm on the platform where I can sing out of my belief. Mm. And the singing that I do encourages people and gives people hope. Like, what is this? Mm. You know, once I became a part of the South Bend City Church community, I think that it was just a big old reassurance from God saying, see, like, I'm still going to use you. Mm. This is not a deal breaker, you know? Mm-hmm. This is not, like, look at what's happening. And it's really, really humbling to know that something that I love to do, it helps people, it makes people feel better, it gives mm-hmm. folks hope. And there's a weight that comes with that, right? Like, I mean, it's not a weight that just bogs me down and I'm all burnt out and tired, but, you know, there's some substance to ministry. And the fact that I get to do that as exactly who I know God created me to be is lit. And then when people see that, hopefully that encourages them that they can be themselves. Mm-hmm. And be Christians, particularly members of the queer community. You know, being a queer Christian isn't an oxymoron. Like, mm-hmm. you can do it. And now that I'm in this position, I feel like I have a bit more of a platform to tell folks, like, hey, Calvary was not exclusive. Mm-hmm. Jesus didn't go to the cross with some of us on his mind. No. You know, so it's been really cool to, number one, realize the impact that I could potentially have on folks, which is just crazy to me. I never thought I would be in this position today. I never did. And I always felt like I had a calling on my life for years and years and years, but I never thought that I could lean into it. And I don't think that that was because of what God said. I think that that's because of what some of his misinformed children said. Mm. So, you know, we believe in the report of the Lord up in here.
Mm-hmm. If he needed you to change, he would have changed you. And if you needed to be different, you would have been built different.
Oh, to the K.
For whoever's listening, if you have the chance to go to South Bend City Church and listen to Zach sing, you absolutely must. One of the greatest voices ever.
You need to stop.
And like, so when I was at that conference and you were started singing, I do not sing Sunday. I'm one of those who just doesn't sing in the back. I didn't even realize it. And then halfway through whatever you were singing that day, my mouth was open and singing, like, and just like my body reacted. And it was like, oh no, that's how much like the spirit was just moving through. So, yes. So, listeners, go South Bend and listen to Zach.
Adding that to the bucket list immediately.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a spiritual experience. So.
And if y'all come up to me and tell me, hey.
Well, Zach, we always like to close out by asking our guests to kind of give a word of wisdom, affirmation to maybe people who find themselves in like a fundamentalist conservative religious space and they feel stuck. And they also know that they are queer in some way, shape, or form. What would you say to that person to kind of give them strength, give them some comfort right now?
Ooh, I would tell them exactly what my mother told me when I came out. I love you. Be yourself. Be safe. Keep praying and hold on to your faith. Hold on to it. You know, a lot of bigotry is promoted under the guise of the Lord said. Mm. And I believe that the sin the sin lies in anything that keeps you from love. That's where the real sin is. And if anybody is giving you any sort of rhetoric that is exclusive, that is mean, that is cutting, that is utter vitriol, that is not of God. I don't care what they say. And at the end of the day, realize that Jesus went to Calvary for you, not your mama, not your daddy, not your sibling, not your friend, not your pastor, nobody. And Jesus sees you and he loves you. Mm. You know? And if there's one thing that I know I did, I made up in my mind that I don't care what anybody thinks or what anybody says, what they think they know, or what authority they think they have as far as my relationship and my salvation goes. I am not going to let anybody take Jesus away from me. Mm. And I want to encourage everybody to not allow anybody to take Jesus from you. Okay? Mm. Because he loves you. Stay in it. Be in it. You know? Yeah. You know, some of his kids are reckless out here.
Mm. Come on.
Some of God's kids are reckless, you know, but just hold on to your faith. Hold on to it and realize that we exist. There are those of us out there that want to encourage you and that are here for you and that love you with the true love of Christ. And the doors of the church are open. That's all I have to say.
So wonderful.
Yeah, real. But that's my word. That's my word. And if anybody ever needs to chat, if they need to talk, work some things out, holla at your boy. Because like I told Brenda a long time ago, we gotta look after each other.
Yep. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
We gotta check on each other.
Yep.
Oh yeah. And I will say, you know, so for me, Zach, I know we've talked about this so many times, but for me and my coming out, Zach, you were such a huge part of that. You were one of my like biggest supports, so encouraging, so kind. And I cannot tell you enough how much I needed you in that moment.
Oh, and so
you really were there for me. And so that is amazing. So you have a glowing review for me that needs support.
I'll Venmo you for that plug after we're done.
Yeah. But yeah, so Zach, if someone would like to reach out to you, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram. My handle is at Mr. M-I-S-T-A Gillis. I'm also on Facebook, Zachary C. Gillis. And if you go on the church's website, southbendcitychurch.com, click on our team, click on my picture. I was blonde, but it's still me. And then you click on my contact and you can send me a message on there.
Well, Zach, it is always so meaningful to have a conversation with you. And thank you so much for coming on this and sharing your story. And I know I am inspired. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure our listeners will be as well. So thank you so much, Zach.
Thank you. Thank y'all so much for having me. And thank you for the work that you're doing.
Of course.
Because what y'all are doing is
incredibly
important. You know, and I think that sometimes we get so wrapped up in just doing what we do that we forget about the impact. And it takes people to remind you that you're doing really, really good work in order for it to click and to grasp. So y'all are really, really doing good work. It's kingdom work, baby. You gotta love people into the kingdom. And that's exactly what you are doing. And you're doing it as yourself. So, I mean, this is bound to be blessed. Y'all gonna be all right.